This is Desiree Scales with the High Velocity Show, and we've got Kevin on the soundboard over there. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Desiree.
How are you?
Good. I've been practicing so I don't mess up anyone's name. We have Desiree on the show.
I know. It's going to be kind of confusing.
Exactly.
You know? But I think we'll get through it.
Definitely.
All right. Well, yeah. So we've got a Desiree and a Desiree, and we've got a Michael. And Kevin, so, you know.
My middle name is Michael, so if we really want to make it confusing, we'll go with that.
We could. But just want to welcome to the show today, we've got Desiree Young from Venture Walk, and she's in Louisiana. Hello, Desiree.
Hello, Desiree.
I know, crazy, huh? I always say that my parents Americanized my name. They got my name from the movie. Is that where your parents, did your parents see the movie Desiree? Or did
I've become familiar with it, of course.
Yeah.
People have made me, yeah, they've made me aware of it, but I think she just liked the name and being in the South, you know, the whole French thing, so.
Yeah, and speaking of French, we've got Michael Guillet with us from Juice Analytics. Hey, Michael.
Hi, Desiree. How are you?
Good. And I just found out that you're French.
I am. My father's French.
So, you know, you've got two French-named girls. Are you French, Desiree?
I don't think so.
No, I'm not either.
It's always interesting.
Go
so
figure.
I don't think so.
I know.
So
go
but
figure.
But I love French food.
Oh, I do too. So, well, welcome to you both, and thanks for sharing, you know, one of the first fall days of the year with us. It's fall here in Atlanta, and seems like business is kind of picking up for everybody, which is great. So, Desiree, we're going to kind of throw it over to you and tell us what you're working on these days.
Certainly. Well, you know, one of the big parts of my business is around pitch coaching and really getting entrepreneurs and business owners ready for either pitch contests, which is very common in my neck of the woods. We actually have entrepreneur season that kicks off right around now. But likewise, the concept of pitching also just helps them, especially this time of year when they're ramping up, to really close more deals, get that last quarter of business rolling. So that's been a lot of my work over the last few months.
So tell us, what is a pitch contest? What is that like?
Got it. Well, you know, it's interesting. I think with the whole crowdfunding community and the onslaught of people being able to pretty much go after funds, go after money to either start their businesses or grow their businesses, this whole arena of pitch contests really opened up. And in essence, it averages anywhere from a 3 to a 20-minute pitch where a person presents their business or their idea and or their concept, very much like the Shark Tank concept. And, of course, it's up to this round of judges or panelists that make the decision whether to fund their idea or not. And I'm sure everybody's familiar, like I said, with Shark Tank. It's very much like that.
Yes, and I think we have our own version of that actually here in Atlanta, Kevin.
Oh, cool.
We had Larry White on a few weeks ago.
Definitely. Yeah, we have Larry on a lot.
Yeah, so that's great. So tell us, you know, why is the business pitch still important to business owners in the online world? I mean, it's just a different world out there.
It is.
Tell us, you know, why is that still important?
It is. It's still really important. I feel like it has lost a little bit of speed, but obviously the contest and, like I mentioned, the idea of businesses still needing to close deals make it important. The reason why it's so crucial, I really believe that the business pitch becomes the thread that every other piece of marketing, whether it's a social media profile, whether it's the copy on their website, as I know you're very familiar with, Desiree,
right,
whether it's on the business card or obviously when they're physically in a networking place locally and speaking, that becomes the thread that really should pull together every piece of marketing material that represents them. And that's really what a pitch truly is. It's not just this canned 30, 60, 2 minute. I believe there are different types of pitches, but it should start to become their anchor online and offline.
So what's the secret to a good business pitch?
You know, the biggest secret is recognizing just what someone's bigger objective is. I believe there are three types of pitches, and so it's not about throwing information at someone. You know, I call this, you know, there's that bullet list, and it's not about this list of all the stuff someone does. Mm-hmm. It's because the person literally feels like they're being hit by a bunch of bullets because it usually doesn't apply to them.
Right.
So the biggest secret for a pitch is to really understand what someone's objective is. Maybe it's just to meet someone and to get them interested. Maybe it really is to get them to buy, or perhaps it is in a setting, like I mentioned, with a contest where they are really going in for the influence and going in for the kill. Depending on what the real objective is, that will adjust what their true pitch is.
Okay, gotcha. So you said that there are three kinds of pitches. Can you elaborate on those?
Sure, sure.
Great.
Well, there's the basic pitch that we're all really familiar with. It's the infamous elevator pitch or elevator speech.
Yep.
You know, people talk about if you're caught in an elevator and you're in there for 30 or 60 seconds and you're in there with a millionaire. I've not personally had that experience yet.
Okay.
However, the concept makes sense, and it's the introduction. It's the telling people just who you are and, more importantly, what you do and why it should matter to them. Mm-hmm. And that whole concept is brief. And it's really a conversation starter. It is to get someone to ask more questions and really to get a sense of who they are so you can know what more to really give them and tell them. It really is just meant as an introduction and hopefully to spark some level of interest. The second type of pitch really is the concept of a sales pitch. That's after this initial conversation has been had, and they're at a point of being interested. They're interested in buying, and the person is really let you know just what it is that they want, who they are, and you kind of can really now start to formulate what your real problem is relative to who they are. And so this concept of a sales pitch, there are going to be many, many types. You'll have a toolbox of basic information, and you pull from it relative to who you're speaking to and what their real issues are. And then finally, there's the funding pitch. This is really when there's an opportunity. It's perhaps in front of a banker or maybe even in front of a family or friend that can somehow make a difference in your concept. Maybe they're lending money. Maybe they're lending their time. But this gets really influential, and it's really, really focused on the big ROI, you know, the return for their investment of whatever it will be. And that's where there's a really big ask, where you've got to give them something to do and really why they should do it and what's in it for them.
Wow. I was familiar with the elevator pitch, and I'm amazed at how many people don't have that down.
I know.
because it's probably one of the most important. I mean, it really captures people's interest. So that's something that you need to really hone down. And do you help people with all three types of pitches, I assume, correct?
I absolutely do. And what's interesting is on my website, I actually allow people to leave me a voicemail with their elevator pitch, and I'll actually give them that feedback for no charge because
wow.
I, like you, Desiree, am just committed to helping people make sure they just at least know how to say who they are and what they do. I agree. It's so important. We're so good, and we spend so much time learning our craft.
Right.
And yet, you know, we fall short in communicating it and getting people interested. And we do ourselves such a disservice. And it's come over many years of my even getting comfortable with that, you know, just kind of putting yourself out there in that way. But it is so very important.
It is. I still work on my pitch. I don't think you stop working on your pitch. I think it's something that you work on all the time.
Absolutely. I want everybody to understand that because it really is one of those evergreen pieces. It's not about perfection, but it is about really knowing how to alter and flex. And really, it's always an experiment, which is what all marketing is. You know, marketing is both an art and a science. And this certainly is that science experimentation. You're always testing. You're always adjusting. But the big thing is that you're always also still putting it out there and making certain you communicate who you are.
Right. So you are really an advocate on action plans and systems. And let's talk about marketing systems. I know you've got the pitch portion of your business, but what about the marketing system? You say that it's a key way to avoid entrepreneur overwhelm and burnout. Tell us about that.
It is. It is. You know, one of the things that I personally really fell into, because I'm in the arena of marketing and small business development, there was kind of a natural thought that, okay, I could just do this work and we'll just keep it running, we'll keep it moving. And I never thought I could replace me, didn't really look to get help, and didn't really systemize a lot of things. But I started to see there were many things I was doing over and over again. And I started to kind of feel like, man, you know, this looks very familiar, but I really felt like I was reinventing wheels every time, and there wasn't a need to do that.
Right.
And when I got probably about 4 or 7 years in, I really started to feel the heaviness of, gosh, I didn't feel I was making traction. I felt like I was getting results for people, but personally it was tough.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was because there were many areas that I started to see were very much the same things happening over and over again. And I had difficulty in getting assistance because I had not communicated just what was going on over and over for myself. I'd never documented it. I'd never set many things automatically on autopilot that could have been set up, such as, you know, things as simple as my series of communication once I meet someone at a networking social or once they get to my website. You know, there was some basic information I always wanted to be able to convey to them.
Right.
But each time I was starting a fresh email, and it was mm-hmm. ridiculous. And I started to see this in myself first and foremost, and really started to see it in the businesses I work with, where they, honest to goodness, would be spending a lot of time on work that was not necessarily the best use of them, that could very easily be automated. And the arena of marketing allows a lot of that, especially with online.
Right, exactly. And I think we're going to see more and more as time goes on of businesses that are relying more on marketing automation. You know, I'm all about that. Our last
yes.
show was about Infusionsoft, which is the system that I use. And in order for your message to come across in a consistent manner, you're exactly right. You have to have a system in place to do that. Rewriting every email fresh is,
I know,
you know, it's never going to be the same if you do that.
It's true, and I think on a certain level, and I've heard this from entrepreneurs, they're so concerned about not being authentic or
right.
not being able to be creative or be in the moment. And what I help them to see is being able to set up some things that are set on autopilot or simply having a process of what they'll do really frees them to be more in the moment, to respond, to have more of those conversations because you know, they're not doing just the random pieces. They can be incredibly spontaneous and really have more time opened up to do that.
Right. So how does a local business start up a, you know, marketing action plan to develop more sales and, you know, build their business, their brand out in the
sure.
world?
Sure. You know, the first piece I've seen, I've worked with, the last count was probably 27 different types of industries. It used to bother me that I didn't have an industry focus, and I finally realized there was some rationale behind that. I started to see that most of them fell into one of three places, and until they really knew where they were relative to the type of marketing they needed, they would often just kind of jump on whatever bandwagon was hot at the time, you know, or whatever salesperson got in front of them at the time.
Right.
Most businesses think of marketing relative to just the visibility side, you know, and so local businesses naturally jump into advertising, which I still believe advertising can be powerful, but that's not necessarily all of their issue. Another phase is maybe they have the visibility, but they're not closing the deals. And one of the assessments that I walk business owners through is to really understand, well, is it a visibility problem, whereas people don't know you exist,
mm-hmm.
or is it that people know you exist, but it's either the wrong group or for whatever reason your offer is not compelling enough to get them to take action.
Right.
And for businesses that have certainly been around for a while and maybe expansion is in their future, they're not really certain about how and where to grow. You know, they're wanting to really push the envelope on being competitive. Most of the time, they fail to see the third part or the third stage of marketing, that's really the loyalty phase where they can get more of their services or different services to their existing clients. I mean, we both know that's always going to be the optimal person to sell to, the one that's bought from you before.
Right.
But it's usually the area that I see most businesses fail to really give attention to if they really looked at their database. And, you know, we're all about the chase and the next one and the new one.
Yeah.
But there are so many opportunities that lie in the existing clients we have.
Absolutely. And you really need to ask your clients for referrals, because if you've done
yes.
a great job for somebody, asking for referrals is a natural. It can be a natural thing. And I think a lot of clients of ours are afraid of actually doing that. They're afraid, well, what if I offend them, or you know, I don't want to bother them. But they're a great resource for you, and I think more and more business owners should take advantage of that.
I completely agree. And that referral system, that's one of the systems that I teach, that
right.
And most of the time, that's the infamous word of mouth, and it is very powerful, and it's built many, many businesses. And giving that even more structure and really having a little bit of a system, whereas you know once a product is shipped or once the service has been delivered, there's an automatic message that goes out about getting those referrals. Something that simple
right.
can make the difference between them hopefully remembering the next time they meet someone that's a possible client, or absolutely being kind of encouraged to do so right then and there. So I completely agree.
If they had a system in place, they wouldn't forget to ask the referral, because at the end of the sales cycle, an email would automatically go out which asks for the referral, correct?
Absolutely.
See?
Absolutely.
That's how that works.
You know, we all know our clients get busy as well. So it's yeah. also to keep ourselves top of mind, even for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, the thing that you, myself, and Michael have in common today is we've all been in business for 15 years or more. Isn't that crazy? That's
yes,
really a good thing. So, Michael, I'm going to bring you into the conversation now.
Okay.
Do you have your pitch perfected?
Not yet.
No?
We're constantly refining it because the audience changes. So I've made a lot of notes. Half the time I'm listening
I know.
To Desiree. And
I'm watching Michael take a lot of
notes.
That's good.
Awesome.
That's good. So Michael, tell us a little bit about Juice Analytics and what you guys, what you're working on. I know it's all about the data and all about the information and how to bring it to the market. Tell us about that.
Sure. So the most important thing to understand about Juice is that we're a design firm.
Yes.
Much like you would think of any design firm. But if you think about IDEO as a design firm that worked with Apple and companies to think about physical products,
mm-hmm.
we think of ourselves much like IDEO, but working with data.
Right.
Because ultimately, we want our audiences and our clients to help with their customers understand how their customers are going to use the data, how it's going to get presented, what it's done with it. So we really kind of take that kind of methodology about it.
Mm-hmm.
Much of what we do comes out of the Georgia Tech School of Industrial Design.
Oh, wow.
So much the same way we think about a physical product, you know, how do we handle it? How is it used? What's the outcome? We think about data in that same way.
Okay, great.
How that manifests itself mm-hmm. in a project
yeah.
is usually like someone says, I have a dashboard that my customers need to use and they don't like it, or they're unwilling to use it, or there's too much training involved. So we'll get involved with helping with that dashboard product or a reporting solution.
Right.
Most of the time, our projects are involved with data that is external to an organization,
mm-hmm.
not an internal project, but something that's communicated externally.
So this data is prepared in such a way that somebody can get it through visual.
That's right. So
yeah.
So our focus is leveraging the kind of the latest web techniques and data visualization capabilities
right.
to deliver it so that not only is the data kind of sexy and attractive to look at so you can draw the audience into it, but it's also very practical to look at. They can understand it. There's no notion of training. And much like you, Kevin, and I were talking earlier about kind of, you know, iOS 7, the
right.
whole idea, can someone just take it and use it?
Right.
No training, no understanding. So we really take that perspective.
Right. So you're trying to simplify something that really is complex behind the scenes, but it doesn't have to be that way for the reader, basically, or for the end user.
Yeah, one of the common flaws we see, particularly in larger organizations, is that there's a really core set of analytical folks, and they aspire for everyone in the organization to be analytical. So they want all their salespeople to be analytical. They want
right.
the doctors and nurses in hospitals to be analytical. Well, they're really good at what they do,
mm-hmm.
but they don't need to be analytical, or they have 10 minutes to consume information.
Right.
You know, the chief of surgery is a really smart person. They don't need to figure out a dashboard.
Exactly. So before you start a data project, what are the most important questions to ask?
Well, primarily, everything starts about the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the audience? What are they doing? What do you want them to accomplish? How do you define success? Probably very similar to how you, Desiree, and Desiree kind of deal with your projects. It's all about
yeah.
the outcome that you're focusing in on.
Right.
And once you kind of define that audience from a design standpoint, then you can really back in to say, like, well, what in our data kind of facilitates that? How is it going to be designed? So everything you probably do in your business is like, what device are they going to be on?
Right.
You know, what browser are they going to be on?
Right.
All those technical things play into it.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it starts with the audience.
So that's interesting. You both mentioned you have to know your audience before you can actually hone your pitch or know what data to present. I think it's very important, and a lot of business owners, and Desiree, you probably agree with this, a lot of business owners don't really have a handle on who their business is. Do you help them with that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I completely understand, like you mentioned, about going after the audience and really knowing what their model is. You know, how is this business not just set to make money, but all of the pieces that are important? How is it set to make a difference? What is that core, the core response that they're really looking to generate? I even in hearing the conversation around the data, it sounds like there's so many similarities. So,
yeah, definitely. So, Michael, what's information design? What does that mean to our audience, basically?
So information design is really, again, thinking about data or information mm-hmm. as a physical product, because you're not really interested about, you know, talking about yourself. You're talking about what they're going to do with it. Mm-hmm. Very often we'll interact with folks and we'll say, okay, this metric is very important. Mm-hmm. Describe why it's important. If it goes down 10%, what should they do with it?
Right.
Right? Does someone get yelled at? Does some, you know, what happens? Mm-hmm. Should they get up out of their chair and call somebody? Is there an emergency button they have to push?
Okay.
So we want them to describe, like, what would happen to this number? And very often or not, you know, people will say, oh, I have all these numbers to report on. And two-thirds of them, they say, well, it's just interesting to know.
Right.
Well, if it doesn't drive the business and nothing, then it's contextual. Mm-hmm. It might be supplemental to a decision.
Right.
But it's not, don't put it at the top. Don't mm-hmm. put it in red. Let's figure out a way to kind of make it supplemental. But what are the key things driving the business?
So, you know, with data visualization, I think things are changing a lot in your world as they are in the design world, you know, online with web design. What's coming up with data visualization? What are we looking at in the future with that?
So clearly, much like everything else in the web world, the device and iPads and tablets and is really kind of driving some change. But primarily what we focus in on in the future is I can put a pretty chart in front of 10 different people.
Right.
And 10 of them won't have a different interpretation.
Right.
That's just the nature of how we are mm-hmm. Because we put it in our own context. The future of visualization is something called data storytelling and putting things into a narrative format. So it's not just a chart, but there's also some text around it, explaining it, giving context so that it's part of this kind of discussion. So that non-analytical person can pick it up and actually read it like they would a book. You know, we historically as humans for hundreds of thousands of years have had this oral tradition of telling stories.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the past 15 years we put, you know, a four quadrant, a six panel dashboard and we expect people to understand it.
Right. Or Venn diagrams. Yeah.
But if we put it into a narrative format, then people start to get it.
Right.
And I think the logical flow after that is right now we're in the business world, we're so consumed with like, I do my job over here, and then when I want to consume information, I stop what I'm doing, I change pages, then I go over here and look at my dashboard. How can the information display and the information experience be part of your workflow?
Right.
Right, just kind of seamlessly part of you don't know that you're looking at a dashboard. You're saying, oh, this is just part of my day, part of my flow.
Kind of like a pilot, you know, with a dashboard in front of them. It just becomes part of the whole scenery for them, really.
Absolutely.
Something that's important that they have to check and watch. But yeah, that makes total sense.
Yes.
It's just part of their workflow.
It's a narrative form, putting into that, and it's just part of their flow. And so there's no notion about like I have reporting over here and all my applications and everything else.
Yeah,
and my website over here. It's all kind of all integrated together.
Right. Exactly. So Desiree, let me ask you this. You know, bringing up this data storytelling. You know, how often do you see in a business pitch where, you know, some of these business owners want to go into all of this data that they have and they complicate their pitch because they're saying too much, perhaps?
Oh, I mean, that is, you know, they do believe that the pitch should be like many, many paragraphs. And
right.
That is so the case.
Right.
And I absolutely love Michael's point, you know, the data storytelling because I so want to take that term. in pitches, it is about storytelling, but it's not about them, and that's a very difficult thing. Obviously, the pitch is supposed to be a tool to communicate who you are, but you really don't talk about yourself. You're again, talking about the person that you're attempting, of course, to whatever it is, get their interest,
right.
If it's the selling, if it's the funding. You want to really tap into their problem. You want to tap into their pain. You want to tap into and sometimes there's some pleasure that you're looking to push them toward, but that's really what the storytelling and the pitch should be about. And you just get to be one theme in the midst of that storytelling. And that's the tricky part of pitching, that it's, you know, it's you're talking and it should benefit you, but it's not really about you.
Right, exactly. And if you give people too much data, right, Michael, I mean, it can confuse people and overwhelm them, and they may be turned off by the product. How do you avoid that?
Well, like we
or
were
the service.
Describing a little bit better is to really have that discussion about the audience. I mean, Desiree makes the perfect point about, you know, that selfishness, right? We want to kind of champion and thump our chest about all our data and put, you know, it's not uncommon for us to get into a room with someone and say, how many key metrics do you have? And they'll say, 75.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably 3, 4, or 5 at most,
right,
you know, that drive your business.
Right.
And you have a pretty good understanding about what those are. So I think it's really kind of goes back to what we all keep touching on, is this idea about what is it about them? I think one of the people we're a big fan of is a woman named Nancy Duarte.
Mm-hmm.
She's a big in the kind of design world. And she talks about this whole idea about making the audience the hero.
Right,
right. In your story, you know, they are the hero. What can you do to make them the champion in this, and not about yourself? You know,
exactly. And you know, you have to bring your value. And what value do you bring to the table? So, do people would data analytics show the audience how the value is brought to the table?
Absolutely. And so many organizations have very talented IT people and talented analytical people, but design is not their, you know, specialty.
Mm-hmm.
So that's clearly what we were bringing to the table, is this whole idea about applying design to the information.
Okay.
And when you start to apply design, you start to think about how the audience is going to interact with it, much like all of us are familiar with the Apple products. How does the box open? How do we experience the iPhone or iPad for the first time?
Right.
Thinking about it in those very kind of physical ways, that's, you know, they're really good at what they do. They'll slice the data, they'll get it, they'll do the analysis, but they don't think in those terms. So we kind of add that layer of kind of, you know, simplicity to say, how do we want it so that they're going to really experience. In fact, one of the things that we used to talk about, not so much, is a whole idea about this idea about information experience.
Right. Tell us about that. What does that mean, information experience?
Well, how is the end user, the audience that you're delivering your information to, mm-hmm. how do they experience it too? Do they get excited about it? Do they get concerned? Mm-hmm. How are they going to kind of use it in a kind of a productive way?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you're kind of like taking the temperature of the audience, their emotions almost.
Oh, yeah. It's all about the emotions.
Is that right?
Yeah, because if we're helping a client deliver information to a nurse or a set of nurses in a hospital, they have 500 things going on. What can we do in those 3 to 5 mm-hmm. seconds to capture their attention to say, pay attention to me?
Right. Exactly. So, you know, I think we've all seen this trend online, infographics, right? Do you guys work with infographics, or and why has that become so popular, Michael?
Infographics solves the initial problem of mm-hmm. the attractiveness of getting the person's attention for the first 3 to 5 seconds. It stops there because it doesn't proceed to allow them to answer some of the questions and provide any degree of exploration. Because if you give 10 people the same infographic, 9 of them are going to look at it, want to be curious. But 8 of them are going to have a different question or want something more from it.
They'll concentrate on different areas of the infographic.
That's right. Yeah. So we, particularly Juice, there's definitely a value to an infographic.
Mm-hmm.
We try to focus in on the live interactive portion because you need for each of those different audiences to kind of view things in a slightly different way. We talk about this idea about designing on rails,
mm-hmm.
right? Give everyone some degree of flexibility, but you're kind of still narrating, keeping them on a set of rails as you put them down their path.
Right, exactly.
Infographics kind of misses the boat a mm-hmm. little bit because it just gets their attention, then it's almost like a just big tease.
Well, it reminds me, you know, I call it data for just general people, you know, people in general, because it captures attention in a way. It reminds me of when we were kids, you know, looking at books. And when you look at an infographic, you see the information really quickly in a way that makes an impact right away, even though it's very simple. But it's something that I can understand, and I don't have to think about it too much when I look at an infographic. So
yeah, there are some really good infographics out there.
There are.
That are really simple, to the point. They answer a very specific set of questions. The flow makes sense. But it's not uncommon, just like any other dashboard, where it gets cluttered.
Mm-hmm.
You're not sure what they're trying to say. So there's always a risk of that. But there's a good way of doing it.
Right. So Desiree, you used infographics with your clients, or do your clients use anything like that when they're doing their pitches?
Absolutely. You know, I was just thinking when Michael was speaking that even in the midst of a pitch, there is the prop that I call, you know, and
like
the
that.
Person is the main focal point in any pitch. They don't want anything to necessarily overshadow them. However, there is a stronger connection, just like what Michael was mentioning, that emotional connection, when you can bring in some type of prop. And in this case, it can be a PowerPoint. It can be, if it's a restaurant, for example, they want to bring samples, you know, because they can, the prop can absolutely work as strengthening that connection and what I like to call the ethical bribe. You know, it's the best way to represent what they have or what they do in a way that the words fall short or in a way that could just further their words. So certainly I've used infographics because of so many visual learners, and it often just gets that point across. And that way you're able to appeal to those who need to hear it, to those who need to see it. And then, of course, if you can get into the other senses, the touch, taste, feel, then it's the cherry on top.
And that would work with the sales pitch and the funding pitch, correct?
It does
in
every single case. And even if they're online, that is where, even in the midst of them talking about their business, it's not just this brag-a-log, but it is this, if you can show an image, then it's that much more powerful. If you can direct them to a website that now gives them some type of interactivity, it's just that much more powerful. And so you can even take this into the online world. Obviously, they can't try food, but they can certainly download a coupon that allows them to go buy it.
Yes. It's all about the engagement, isn't it?
Yes.
iOS 7 has scratch and sniff now, right?
No scratch and sniff yet. I heard that's coming. Smell-o-vision. I keep waiting for that. You know, I love buying perfume, but boy, I wish there was a way to buy it online so I didn't have to go stand at the counter at Macy's and spray all these perfumes, right? Start sneezing.
I would love to see that technology.
Right.
A lot of laws about shipping alcohol.
Yeah, I know.
Under
exactly. Exactly. So, you know, Michael, why does somebody need to hire a firm to create design? Why can't they just go buy a charting program or one of those out-of-the-box solutions? What is it that you guys bring to the table that is special?
Well, even broader than juice, I mean, design is something that's kind of playing out really important. I think Apple gives us kind of a really good precedent for that, about how easy it is to consume something, how people get really passionate about it. So I think design is something important. If you even see a lot of the VCs now in Silicon Valley will tell you need the technical founder, you need a business person, and you need a design lead.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's part of the team now.
Yeah, you know, you're part of kind of the leadership. They're really concerned about design. I think, you know, regardless of juice, I mean, putting design kind of foremost. We all, I mean, if you think about all the companies, particularly all the Fortune 500 companies here in Atlanta, I mean, like Newell Rubbermaid is just across the street from where we are.
Yep.
I mean, they spend millions of dollars in packaging.
Absolutely.
Right? How do they stand out on the shelf? Mm-hmm. How do they stand out from their competitors? How do they make it easy for the consumers to consume it?
Right.
They have to think about information in that same way.
That's exactly right. So, well, it's a great conversation. I love that we're talking about design and yet has a lot to do with pitching and data. How did you first marry design and data? I mean, when you started out, you weren't doing that, right?
You know, me personally, I started out as doing a lot of heavy data analysis and economic modeling and all those things. And I think my passion for visualization and for what we're doing came about by I would work hard and then deliver it, and it fell flat.
Oh, right.
Right? And they'd say, wow, this is neat. We'll talk about it. We'll get back to you. Send me your slides.
There's too many things to think about here. You overwhelmed them.
Yeah. So I recognized that I was putting in all this effort personally, and there needed to be something else. And that's how I got connected to Zach and Chris, the founders at Juice.
Right.
And because we had these technical problems that we wanted our audience to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the light bulb went on for me and how important that was. We refer to it in a lot of cases as the last mile.
Right.
Right. You do all this work, and imagine the same case with you, Desiree, and your work, is you get all this effort, but then that three-second experience between the user and their experience, you have this small window to be successful. So
Absolutely.
We refer to that as the last mile, and our concentration is on that. And we've just developed, you know, and when you see the success, when you see kind of a set of doctors kind of get that eureka moment, or you see kind of an agency finally get something,
right.
You know, that they've been getting in PowerPoint and Excel before,
right?
That kind of makes it worthwhile.
So you see the light bulb actually turn on
exactly
once the data is consumed in a way that is understood.
That's right. So we have this little phrase that we use internally sometimes about it's aha, not wow. So
yeah.
Infographic is wow, and then what we do is aha.
I gotcha. Aha.
That's I like
good.
That.
I do. I like that too. So you mentioned healthcare already a few times. What kind of other clients do you work with?
So most of our clients at the current time are either in the healthcare space
mm-hmm.
or digital advertising.
Right.
And it ends up being most of our clients end up being where data is becoming new to them.
Mm-hmm.
There's no common language about or way to display it and visualize it. So if you think about if we had a bunch of accountants here, they have P&Ls and balance sheets and ways to chart that and a common language, you know, that they use.
Yeah.
And all these other places where data is just exploding, they're still trying to figure that out.
Right.
So
Excel spreadsheets are not going to do it.
Right.
Yep.
Right. They work great for accountants.
Right.
But for all these other audiences, they don't want to be experienced. We've had a little bit of experience in kind of the music industry.
Oh, wow.
And working with artists. And
how's that?
Oh, it's
doing
it,
what?
It's just trying to help the analytical folks
uh-huh.
talk to an artist uh-huh. has been amazing.
I bet.
Yeah, just to get the artist to kind of artist sees a PowerPoint or a chart, they shut it down.
Exactly.
They think they're trying to be tricked.
Right. Well, I'll tell you. I mean, my background is music. I used to be an opera singer in college.
Wow.
Yes, and I play piano and guitar, and so I totally understand that. I've worked with a lot of musicians. It's very interesting to me that you guys are using this, I call it magic, data magic, to talk to musicians and artists about their work and how it's affecting, you know, the world and affecting their listeners, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you have,
wow.
It's always the case where the analytical person says to the non-analytical person, you need to understand what I understand selfishly.
Right.
Versus saying, how can I help you understand it in a way that you're used to seeing it?
Yeah. Well, that's really great. There's a lot of magic there when you can turn the light on, like you said, an aha moment in a very different way through design. I love that. So Desiree, just asking, you know, you kind of the same question. What are your typical clients? Who do you typically work with?
Sure. Well, you know, I've recently, and someone else gave this to me, so I didn't come up with it, but it literally is cradle to the grave.
Okay.
A lot of child care centers,
okay.
funeral services.
Wow.
certainly, there's been a healthcare, a clinic, most recently mm-hmm. that we've been working with over the last few years. Martial arts studios, cafes and restaurants, coffee shops, professional artists as well. Not so much the musicians.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. They are so incredibly unique. But in this particular area, there's a lot of specialties that are so relevant just for them. So, but we certainly work with those professional artists and those who are looking to leverage their local presence, but certainly also to leverage their business model. How do they now make sure that they're sustainable, perhaps just beyond the 50 to 100 miles that they're able to reach? And
right.
so our service-based businesses usually are trying to leverage some type of product in their mix and vice versa. Those that are very product-based, there's usually perhaps some opportunity for some service. That's one of the many strategies that we utilize to help local businesses remain competitive, and certainly, obviously, using both online and offline marketing and it just to leverage getting the word out and leverage even converting people.
So I've heard that your clients call you their business GPS, you
right.
know? I love that. I thought that was great on your website, that you help point people to the right direction, really. You get them to where they're trying to go.
Yeah, you know, my background, I was a mechanical engineer in my
wow.
former life.
Uh-huh.
Very different from
yes.
what I get to do now, but it's that piece of it, a lot of that planning, that thinking through, just kind of, there is some logic, but like I mentioned earlier, it's not always just the brain part of it. You know, it is also the checking in to the person. You know, businesses are so often extensions of who we are, and so there's always this check-in and managing to make certain that people are growing what really suits them. And for local businesses, I find that being kind of difficult because most of the time there is an existing model and they're attempting to just be like, you know, fill in the blank. But that particular exact model may not suit them. And, you know, it's kind of, they've gotten into the business and they finally realize that, you know, there's some resistance and they're like, but this isn't working. It worked for them. Why isn't it working for me? So I learned swiftly that the information side, as much as I love it because I'm an engineer and I love bringing this will make sense and this is why, there was the check-in to the personal side that I quickly learned had to be really put into the equation.
So let's talk about that, because you talk about what are called pitch personas.
Right.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, there are some specific personalities that I feel like I've been able to identify. It's certainly relative to how people communicate, but it's also relative to how they pitch and sell.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, usually the research is continuing, but I usually find someone is fitting in at least one of these. There's usually one that's dominant, and they are usually going to fit into at least one. Most people find themselves in more than one, but I find it's been fairly consistent that they're able to relate.
Gotcha. So, you know, and as somebody is pitching, I mean, obviously, Michael, there are people that want data. They just want raw data, and there are people that purely work on emotion. Do you have several different types of pitches? Do you look at your audience before you do the pitch and really kind of think about...
Well, you know, the big piece, like I mentioned earlier, was them understanding just who they're speaking
right.
to. Because clearly, when it is a funding type of pitch, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be speaking to either what I call the shark or the penguin. You know, the person that they are not emotionally driven.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly want the facts. They want the figures. They want the bigger why, not necessarily getting into all of the how. They want to know that my money's going to come back to me, that you'll pay that first, you know, that payment once the loan is closed, et cetera.
Right.
And the penguin, that's the shark. On the penguin end, they really, really like information, normally have been educated, and they want to make sure you know that they've been educated. And so they're influenced, and quite frankly, they get impressed by hearing one's knowledge and understanding of their market. And on some levels, all of them are important. There's not just one that's over another. But it is first in knowing who the audience is, but also knowing your own style.
Yeah,
because
the persona,
it's
right?
It's difficult to jump out of your style.
Yeah, so you got to know your pitch persona? Is that what you're saying?
I am, yes.
Yeah, okay, great.
Yeah, and it's not about changing it. You
right.
know, because I find people, I have people who come up, maybe they've gone through one of my free messages or seminars, and they'll say, you know, I'm a dolphin, which dolphin are the people person, you know, they love just to chat and talk. They're like, I'm a dolphin, but I need to be more of a shark.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, not necessarily.
Right. I think I'm a dolphin. I think that fits me. I don't know. That's an issue.
Dolphins are wonderful for pitching, let me just say, because they reach the people. And most people make decisions based off of emotion first.
Yeah.
And logic second. So, you know, the big deal is really allowing who and what you are to come through. And obviously there's some adjustment if you do know your audience. But at the end of the day, people still want to buy into the passion. And if people attempt to be something outside of who they are, that's the first thing that gets sacrificed. The real passion, the real, you know, connection that they see with you and your concept or you and your business. And so it's really about embracing what your persona is versus trying to abort it.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And if you truly know exactly who you are and what you can bring to the table, I think it's a lot more effective when you're trying to, you know, talk about your business. You know, Michael, obviously you know exactly what you guys bring to the table and the value that you bring.
Yeah, I think what changes the most for us is just the examples we use.
Right.
You know, we'll talk about design and then depending upon the audience, we'll change the examples, because some people know nothing about data visualization or storytelling, and it's really about a report. So so we try and think about who that audience is and what are the examples that are going to kind of resonate for them. Or, you know, what are businesses like them that, you know, they might know about your firm, Desiree? Like, don't you love her designs? Like, well, we would do that, but just if you had information to deliver. So examples is kind of how we kind of make those subtle changes in our kind of elevator.
Right. Okay. So let me ask you this. Do people come to you already with the data, or do you help them mine the data too, or do they already have that information?
So it's not ideally,
okay.
In an ideal world, people already know the analysis and the interpretation that they want to deliver and what they want their users and audience to understand.
Right.
We're just helping them package it up deliver it. But it's not uncommon in a startup environment. You know, you get the kind of the wild-eyed CEO to say, I have this great idea, and we end up kind of helping them with the data story a little bit.
Okay.
But that's really the exception. Our concentration is that you've got a great story, you've got awesome data, we're just helping you package it and deliver it so that, you know, those aha moments with the audience.
Right. Gotcha. So where can we find you, Michael, online?
So you can find us in a couple different places. So juiceanalytics.com is kind of the most popular place. The other place, if you just choose chartchooser.com, it's kind of free downloadable content make available. So schools, nonprofits, universities, students use that as a way to kind of get some templates for an Excel and PowerPoint templates.
Great.
So we actively share that. And then those are really the way we do it. And then we also kind of have a very popular blog on our website where we kind of try and talk about our perspective on data and how we think about it and why we think, you know, hopefully the broader data industry should think about design as a more important aspect.
Great. And Desiree, where do we find you online?
Certainly. Well, our website, venturewalk.com, is the first and best place. I encourage people, certainly, as I mentioned, to submit their 30, 60, 90-second pitch, which they can do that online, and we will give them some feedback on some areas to adjust and make it even better. Likewise, on social media, every Wednesday is Winning Pitch Wednesday.
Ah.
And what happens is that we cower and search the Internet and learn of all of the business plan and pitch contests happening all over the U.S. and actually outside of the U.S. and list the information on how they can join in. And so they can find us on Facebook, on our fan page, Adventure Walk, certainly on Twitter. The best way on Twitter is at my handle, at Desiree Young, as well as on LinkedIn.
Great. Well, thank you both of you for being on the show today. It was a really great show, very informational. I learned a lot. I took a lot of notes.
And thanks for having us. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no problem.
It was.
Hopefully
thank
you guys will come back again.
Sure, absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much. And so New Orleans, enjoy. You know, is that where you're at right now? You're in New Orleans?
I am. I live about 15 miles outside of New Orleans, but close enough to get a good beignet every now and then.
I'm so jealous. Well, enjoy your day, the rest of your little rainy, you know, rainy day, a little rain falling down, which is a good thing in New Orleans.
You.
But thank you so much for joining us from New Orleans, too. And Michael, you're here in Atlanta. You're a local boy here. So, it's all good.
No, thanks again.
I love it. Thank you. All right. And this is Desiree Scales. This is the High Velocity Show. And have a great week.